God bless you. I'm excited about today's teaching. Last week, Dad did a teaching on endurance, and the chapter of Hebrews is about faith, but it's really about endurance. How much you got in you? And anybody who's done athletics or chemical engineering or raising seven kids or five kids, you have to have endurance. And so there's a different way of training that is just, it's okay to fail, just don't quit. So there's one of the things about training, but Cam Newton, does anybody here know who Cam Newton is?
Nope.
Cam Newton is he was a professional football player. He won a national championship in junior college, so he was a backup for Tim Tebow at Florida. He bought a stolen laptop. I could be off on some of these statistics. He bought a stolen laptop. Now he's ineligible, so he had to go to JUCO. Goes to JUCO, wins a national championship. I know some guys that played against him. I guess he couldn't play, or he couldn't throw a JUCO. Then he goes to the University of Auburn and wins a national championship. Okay, that's very difficult. And to be picked in the first round of the draft pick is incredible. It's like an Olympic gold. You know what pick he was? He was number one. The first pick in the whole draft.
Wow.
Who was number two?
Von Miller.
Von Miller. Who did he play for?
Broncos.
Denver Broncos. Okay. And so then he went to Carolina, and he took, and I could be off a little bit on this, but I believe at Carolina, when they went to the Super Bowl, they were undefeated before they played the Denver Broncos. An undefeated season going in, and you're like, okay, so it kind of paints a picture of this guy. What's important is with his football resume, is for whatever your discipline, apply it. So chemical engineering or football, FIFA, softball, or whatever your discipline is. He was interviewed, and this is back when he's really, really, really good looking. He's really good looking. He's like a Tim Tebow, but he can really run. He can throw. It wasn't even fair. But he was interviewed, and he was being interviewed, and all I remember from this interview was, they're talking about how successful he is. And he said, and I quote, "Do you know how many free weekends I had growing up?" Pause. He said, "About five." The whole life growing up, I had five weekends off. My dad trained me. And then there's pause going, man, what kind of life was that? And then he goes, and if I ever get to have a child, he won't get 5 days off either. 5 days off. I would not have my dad do anything different. Now, for the purpose of this teaching, let's just imagine that the calling for Cam Newton in Christ was to become that. And the father was, and we're going to project some things, and the father understood, here's what he's going to do. And so with that kind of athletics with Lionel Messi, we love to see the gold medalists. We love to see these champions and to see these things. But what did it take? We look at Avery Johnson, some of the. And I'll go back to NFL because that's kind of football was my thing. Bryce Brown, from like 1994 till about 2004, there was a city league rushing record held by
Tyrone Phillips,
the guy that you can play with. How many years? 1994, 2004, unbroken, and those aren't exact numbers, just close. But then a guy named, I think John Randall breaks it. So how easy is it to break these rushing records? Bryce Brown as a freshman breaks it. Bryce Brown as a sophomore breaks it again. As his junior year breaks his again, and for 4 years he broke his own rushing record. This guy's standards were not here. His standards were, I gotta be somewhere. Because when you saw him run the football, he never quit. He had this desire, I have to score. Avery Johnson was like that too. I've never seen a competitor like Bryce except for Avery Johnson. this guy, he's running or trying to get the end zone as if his life is on the line. You get to see this competitive. Where did he get that? That nature, that discipline that they have is not from the environment they're around. Everybody else on the team's looking, and they bring it a little higher. Now, Elijah got to train with Avery, 7th grade?
High school.
I thought it was like an 8th grade.
It's freshman year.
Okay. We have no idea how good this person is going to be. But you learn in athletics or actually in the gym or in sports, like with Brian, Esther might be doing this too with some of her camps. But what Brian Butler does better than anybody I've ever seen is he puts you next to the most talented people in the state. Guess what happens? You're no longer the big fish anymore. All of a sudden, you're slow, unprepared, you don't eat right, and you're next to an All-American or All-State. I didn't get that, and Israel didn't get that until we went to college. Bryce Brown had been doing it since he was like in 8th grade. Avery and Elijah were doing it, and all of a sudden, so when they step on the football field, these guys, our standards are so much higher, so much higher. this morning, somebody sent me a coach that I got to. He played for the Green Bay Packers. His sons played for TCU. One was all Mountain West. Then he was all Big 12. Supposed to get drafted. His other son, the only two kids get drafted out of Rose Hill. Sent me this thing, and it was this morning. It was from the University of Florida, and there's this coach talking to all these players, going, "Why are you here? What are you doing here?" And it was a standard. And he went, who and what is your enemy? If you don't know who your enemy is, how can you beat him? You have to know your enemy. And I'll say enemy, it could be opponent. If you're not studying your opponent, how can you beat him? And when this coach was going into anybody at Division I level, with few exceptions, has been training and studying and going without girlfriends and beer and parties. They don't do those things. Why? They're thinking of the NFL. They're thinking of the dream of an NFL, a higher calling. Their goals are not necessarily in junior league. They're thinking there's a chance if I keep doing this. And in our calling in Christ, every one of us has an opportunity to become a Michael Phelps. You have a calling. You have a calling. Every one of us has a calling. And you could be a 5-time gold medalist. You might not be like a Cam Newton, 6'4", fast, athletic, you don't get hurt. But according to your calling in Christ, each one of us will have a chance. But what he said, one of your biggest enemies is, first of all, it's yourself. It's this. Your brain will tell you to quit. It's not worth it first. And he goes, and then the second thing is your comfort zone. Your comfort zone is your enemy. You are not here at the University of Florida because you're comfortable. You're here at the University of Florida because you fight your comfort. You break out. Comfort is what obese, lazy couch potatoes that are on unemployment. That's comfort. You are here because you're breaking through. You learn to face your enemies and your giants. And what he was trying to do with each one of these players, you guys don't get along. You don't like each other. But you're a team. You don't have to like each other. And sports will do that. I had a lot of friends I shouldn't have friends with because they're cool. And then all of a sudden I started getting good at football, and guess what happened? All of a sudden I started having friends with people I didn't like. One of the guys I became friends with because he was so much stronger than me, but he didn't wipe his butt. Ew. He had a real problem. He smelled like, that's what he smelled like. But he was the strongest guy on the football team. Nobody liked him. It was just he didn't have people skills. And he ended up becoming my friend. Not because we got along. Not because he was comfortable. Your flesh will tell you who you need to be around and with are those who accept you and make you comfortable. That is just the opposite. Your comfort zone, those friends at school that go out and get drunk, those people who are dating and saying they're in love with people, they're going to get pregnant at 15 or 16, that's comfort zone. They're not, and so he went on to explain these things. So with the NFL, and applies to softball or whatever your thing is, with the NFL, every football player has a future with the NFL. That's a riddle. How does every football player have a future with NFL? Some football players will play in the NFL. Other people will watch the NFL and just talk about what they could have been. We grew up with a lot of people that were so talented that they possibly could have made it. Gangbangers, no parent, like Jerry Caldwell, two people that are drinking alcohol, get their girlfriends pregnant. You knew some kids in the May, they got their girlfriend pregnant and everything's gone. Where was your focus? And the focus was comfort. But the NFL, and what I want to do with this teaching is, the NFL is going to be the new heaven and earth. The new heaven and earth. So everybody that plays football has, they're going to have a relationship with the NFL eventually. You're in high school, you drop out, you quit, you hate your coach, you do something stupid, and now you get to watch the NFL, and you're going to be regretting it the rest of your life if you could have played in the NFL. You missed it. Bryce Brown's going to miss it. He missed it because he fumbled the ball. And he had this guy, the first time he played, it was, what was his name? Who's Chucky? John Gruden's like, welcome to the NFL! Look at this guy! Then he fumbled twice. And he just missed it. But that was just an error. Nobody or very few people will make it to the NFL or the Olympics unless they're focusing at it on at a young age, or if they have a parent or a coach going, you got talent. I don't want to think about that. Your frontal lobe, your brain, is not fully developed till you're 25. Did you know that? You can be smart, you can be big, you can have full of testosterone, you can ace your thing, you can make money, but there's something called your frontal lobe is not developed to 25. I learned this when I was about 35. And this guy says, he was explaining, he goes, men are kind of mentally handicapped when it comes to women. The frontal lobe is forethought. It's thinking 5 years in advance. And he goes, men, until we're about 25, we're thinking 30 days in advance. And then I started thinking, I was like, when I was 20, I was thinking, Friday. What are we doing Friday? And so this is an enemy. It's a handicap to say, you learn how to become very fast. You learn how to get better, but you had to address something. I'm not naturally fast. I got to work at it. Foresight is a weakness for young men. So the NFL is going to be the new heaven and earth. That's where we're all going eventually. Some people are going to just get in, and some people are going to be happy. Hey, I'm happy to be here. All right. But a lot of people are going to know they really missed it. And they're going to see other people they grew up with. Now, let's just say you have the same talent as Avery, and you decided to get a girl pregnant, or you decided to punch a coach. And you see him in the NFL, and you're going to be like, man, I just missed it. We're gonna suffer some sort of loss. What did you do? Were you training for the new heaven and earth? No, I wasn't. I was training for comfort. I was training for retirement, or to keep my family together, or just to get along, or to be cool, or somebody to appreciate me. And so back to that's where the coach is going to say, that's it. It's going to be a weakness if you're not training for something. Jesus Christ, he picked his disciples. And it was neat when you're watching The Chosen, because they take a lot of liberties. I don't agree with all of them. But I was talking to my wife, Vero, and we're talking. I said, when he picks the disciples at the beginning, do their lives get easier?
No.
How many of you in here get irritated because your life just got harder? Do you know how I'm doing? And you just...
Yeah.
And what is that? That's just an error in our thinking that your life is supposed to get easier. What is the purpose of your life? 2 Corinthians 5, 14-15.
Go ahead.
For the love of the Christ constraineth us, having judged this, that one in behalf of all died, hence they all died, in order that those who live no longer for themselves should live, but for him who died for them. So you're supposed to live for Christ.
It's not just serve.
Serving, you're going to burn out. This isn't worth it. You're going to the new earth. What kind of construction job are you going to be building in the new earth? What kind of, I got a vision. I was praying for my wife, and here's her father died prematurely, and he had all the odds against him as his foreman. As I was praying for her, I saw, I didn't physically see, but it was communicated like a vision that I could see her dad on this farm. A beautiful farm. I mean, it's a huge farm with huge implements, and he's smiling and shining like a wealthy farmer. And then I could see her brother with him, and I'm looking at this, and as I'm looking at all this, it was, and this is going to be the land you're going to let them lease out. They're going to be there, and the job that they're going to have on the new earth is going to be, welcome, Dad. I got a farm for you to take care of. And your dad will get to inherit these things. Maybe they didn't do it, but you get to give them a chance. And here's her brother. Then I was thinking about this even more. I Yahweh communicated the ranch in Oklahoma, 6,000 acres. What did Nani do for the new earth to inherit that? I don't know. But what if that's part of Dad's inheritance? That's going to be mine. I want it. Do you think King David wanted some of the mountain ranges? Yeah, I'll take it. If it's there, I want it. I want the ranch. I want these things. And what if at the new heaven and new earth, Granddad Hill, come here, Granddad, here's the land. Great, this is my property. No, that's not yours. That's Chuck's. Chuck? That's your grandson. Look what he did. And now he's going to get to work for you. Where did that happen? It happened with Joseph and his family. Here's Joseph and his family didn't understand, and they didn't get along, and Joseph's just being faithful, 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 and then they get to inherit and have to get to have all that. And this fellowship here, how are we so different? Because this isn't easy. We're grateful for all members of the body of Christ and all churches and things, but most churches are going to where I fit in. I'll find a building where I agree with their teaching that makes me comfortable. Then I'll come, and you're not going to agree with everything. But the things I disagree are going to be this big, this big, this big. What's wrong with that? This is elite training. This is training to fight Satan, to fight Goliath. How can anybody kill Goliath if they don't have a good translation? They don't know where different words were added or taken out. You're going to fight Satan? Most translations, they're not translations. They're called interpretations. That's where they take the liberty of the words and tell you what it means. Do you think that diluted word helps you fight Satan? Mm-hmm. And so what this is it's elite training. And so you might not like the guy next to you. I didn't like the guys at Butler. I didn't like most of them. But I wanted to win. I really, really wanted to win. And every once in a while you're on a team and there's somebody that really irritates you, but you need that catcher. You need that third baseman. And everybody's being hard on that third baseman because she made two errors, but there's nobody better than her. So what are you going to do? Do you yell at her? Do you embarrass her? No. We build her up because that's all you got. So in here, and in a family, especially your guys' family, you got all your whole family here. This is a team. You don't have to like each other. It's not about liking each other. It's not about agreeing. It's not about comfort. It's about, I got your back, you got my back, we can agree to disagree. Satan is the enemy. I'm the enemy. My flesh is the enemy. We're going somewhere, and I'm going to see you when Jesus Christ says, well done, faithful servant. Come on up here. And we'll be clapping just like we supported you with your athletics, with training and training and training. What did you have to do? What did you go without with training? What did you guys go without with the way ministry? The discipline. You're giving up friends. You're not going out partying. You're not going out being cool. There's girls your age that are dating, and they're doing really dumb things. The reward is immediate gratification. And who is the greatest competitor of all time?
Yahushua.
Right. The greatest competitor of all time. And what did the Apostle Paul say about him? Imitate me as I imitate Christ. Christ, in Hebrews 12, how did he do it? He was focusing on the NFL. He was focusing on the gold medal. He was focusing standards higher than everybody. So was Joseph. So is Daniel. So these guys are like, I'm not blending in. There's a resurrection. And when is it? I don't think Tim Sowers was ready to go to sleep. What books did he not have ready to... He's gone. That's it. And when is Christ coming back? We don't know. So when does the next life begin? We have no idea. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2 says, Jesus Christ carried the cross for you and I by focusing on the glory that was set before Him. What glory was that? He's going to be seated at the right hand of the Father. He's going to get a 1,000-year kingdom. Except it didn't say that he would have saw that, but now we know he get a 1,000-year kingdom. He's going to be the one who's going to wake up Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Yeah. Abraham, get up!
Yeah.
Hey, Mom! Ema! He's still alive. Don't you think he wants to see his mom? And he gets to inherit all these things. He didn't get to have children. But on the day of Pentecost, he was cloned. He had lots of babies. And they spoke in tongues, and the Holy Spirit is inside them, and here it is. Pow! And you take Jesus Christ after the day of Pentecost. This is silly. What do you regret? What disciplined thing did you do in your life do you regret? That's ridiculous. Well, who's the closest that we can find that is like Jesus Christ? Debatable, but I'm going to say the Apostle Paul. Mm-hmm. Yahweh used him to pen more books. Here's the Apostle Paul. He gets a revelation of the sacred secret that nobody knew. Here's Apostle Paul doing this, he's doing that. But the Apostle Paul and his training, if you turn to Philippians chapter 3, verse 10, that later on he says, You imitate me as I imitated Christ. Christ obtained His glory because he was focused on the NFL. Avery Johnson doesn't train. He's a quarterback for the Kansas State Wildcats. One of the highest recruited football players ever for the K-State also. He did not get that far by playing video games, going out on Friday and Saturday, staying out late, fighting with his mom and his dad. Being disobedient, no, it is by conforming, submitting, killing your flesh. Not just that, because in football, you have to know, if you're the quarterback, you have to know more than everybody on the field. You're a coach. He has to know the plays up and down. Other guys have got to know your position. He's got to know everybody. And how did he do that? It would be neat to get to talk to him and say, what is your aspiration and what do you think it is?
NFL.
It'd be, I would love to be at the NFL. I would love the NFL. That's to be drafted in the NFL. Would somebody read Philippians 3, verse 10?
To get to know Him and the power of His resurrection and fellowship of His suffering, becoming conformed unto His death. If by any means I may advance to the earlier resurrection, which is from among the dead.
So all before this, he's going to talk about who he was and the life before, all of his resume. I was a Jew of Jews. I did this. I did that. Here's all this discipline. It's nothing. The training's nothing. If you ask one of these guys that's one of the gold medalists, do you regret any of the training? It's garbage. It's done. It's gone. It's over. I don't think about the training. And actually, you would insult them. Do you regret the discipline? Here this is, he's going to say, and I don't think that necessarily applies to what the Apostle Paul's saying here, but for this teaching, let's project it. He's going, the discipline, all I did is nothing. I want to know Christ and the fellowship of His suffering. Okay. Who here wants, what did Christ, Esther, what was the suffering of Christ? Have you seen the Passion?
Yeah.
Who wants to go through that?
Nobody.
Who would if you're not focusing on the glory?
Nobody.
In the Gospels, Jesus Christ talked about the suffering and the glory. Sometimes He just talked about the glory. But He never talked about the suffering without the glory. That's E.W. Bollinger. Anytime He talked about the suffering, He said, but. In high school, you're going to lose friends. How many parties did you miss out because you're playing stupid football? Look at all the things you're missing out on. I'm sure in your head you're thinking, I'm missing out on hunting. I'm not hunting with my buddies. I could be doing this. I got this stupid coach yelling at me. I don't even like anymore. I don't like any of the coaches. I don't like most of the team. What am I doing here? What do you regret? And so that's what we got to train ourselves. You say, being comfortable in what greatness. And here the Apostle Paul, I want to suffer like Christ. Why? He's not a sadomasochistic. It's because the glory. Look what Christ did. Look where he went. He made it. He broke through death, guys. And here's the Apostle Paul going to say, and here he is. And what was the Apostle Paul focusing on?
Glory.
Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. It's 11:23. Dad read this last week, but here's the Apostle Paul. He's going to say everything that's happened to him. He was beaten with whips. He was shipwrecked, I think, 3 times. 1 time stuck out of the ocean for a day and a night. He was stoned. They drug him out as if he was dead. He was rejected by who? The people he loved. The people he loved. Just like Joseph and his father, or his father just rejected at the beginning. Just like Jesus Christ, the people he loved rejected him and they tried to kill him. And here he is. How did he do all that? Just read 23 through 33. What did he endure? And I think, so Dad's teaching last week was endurance. How do we endure like them? You're not going to endure. What football player is going to endure those things if they're not focused on the NFL? A guy came to bid to paint my office, and he talked about he trains kids just like Brian and this other stuff, and he's not a good Christian guy. But everybody talks about going to NFL, this, NFL, that. And I started sitting there, and I'm thinking, but I had to play devil's advocate, and I went, I got to be honest with you. If I wasn't dreaming about the NFL, I wouldn't have done half the things I did. They needed hope.
Yeah.
And because of the hope, because of a chance of getting noticed, of some sort of reward, that I will go the extra step. Because the coach doesn't deserve it. Your kids won't deserve it. Your spouse won't deserve it. You won't deserve it. But maybe. And then when we sit there and we go, is this part of my calling? We could be like a Joseph that no matter where he was, he never quit his calling. It wasn't about comfort because he's in prison. It wasn't about comfort because here he is with Potiphar. It wasn't about comfort because now he's on the hook with Pharaoh. But I believe Joseph did what he did. Not saving the life of the people, of his loved ones, was Yahweh says, seek ye first my kingdom and I'll give you all this. Right? Joseph was seeking the rule. The kingdom is the rule. And he got what? All his brothers. And what was he been focusing on? It would have been the resurrection, the hope of the resurrection. And turn to Exodus chapter 32. And so, what position could you possibly be in at the resurrection? What is your job going to be? Are you going to own land? And I'm going to say, who is someone who might, and I'm going to stress the word might not have seen it as clearly as I just showed the Apostle Paul? Where are you going? Where are you going? Where are you going? Where are you going? Esther, we're going, you know, you used to say when we're growing up, we're going to Colorado. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And what will we do to tell you? We're going to be in the mountains. You're going to feed the chipmunks. We're going to be there, and we would paint a picture for you. Okay. You wouldn't have just gotten in the car for 10 hours for no reason. But there was hope. Where are you going? Where are we going? And in Exodus chapter 32, verse 7, after the 9 wars with Yahweh against Israel, then the 10th was what? The 10th was the Passover lamb. Moses gets to deliver Israel out of Egypt. Here they are. He gives them the 10 commandments. Here's what you're going to do. What do they say? We're going to do it.
Yeah.
Just like these are revivals at church. Who wants to come up here and give their lesson? I give myself to Christ. I'll give this. And so maybe good intentions. And we'll see. We'll see. And he comes down to Exodus chapter 32, verse 7. Would somebody read that for me?
This begged Yahweh unto Moses, go get thee down, for the people whom thou hast brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made for themselves a molten calf, and have bowed themselves down thereof, and have sacrificed thereto, and have said, These are our gods, O Israel. You have brought thee up out of the land of Egypt.
Okay, so Moses is having a really good time, fellowship. You ever had that? Great fellowship. And then he goes, this just happened. Do you think this shocked Moses?
Yeah.
I was recently reading the Word, and you know, reading same things I've read over and over again, going, what's the purpose of reading the same story over again? It's because the author's in the room, and he'll keep teaching you if you're teachable, if you show up to class. Opening the Bible, here it was, and I'm reading through Exodus, and I get to the Passover lamb, and Yahweh goes, what's the difference between this? You got frogs, you got lice and flies, you have darkness, you have hail, you got locusts, you got blood, I can't remember, you got all these things. Okay, what's the difference between the first nine wars or conflicts and the tenth? I sat there and kind of looking. I'm like, I don't know. And I read on. The tenth, they had a choice to live. This whole book's about life and death.
Oh, yeah.
Before, Yahweh's going, I got to put the wrath of Yahweh, the fear of Yahweh in you. And what did he do for the first nine conflicts? Scare the snot out of everybody.
Yeah, I bet.
Here's even Moses going, oh, golly, what's the purpose of this conflict? I got to sober you up. When I was about your age, I was invincible. Now, do you know what sobered me up? Red and blue flashing lights in my rearview mirror. All of a sudden, whoa, I'm not trying to be cool anymore. I'm not trying to blend it. I turn the radio off, and I get really polite. I go, whoa, what was I doing? Was I speeding? Was I doing something stupid? And Yahweh, and as I read that about the Passover lamb, Yahweh, it was... Aaron, do you think any of these people were ready for death to pass over them before the nine conflicts? Or the nine conflicts preparing them to say, you better take this very serious. So it's nine conflicts, and all of a sudden they're going, don't test them. Don't test them. Don't test. Then you get to the tenth one, and Yahweh goes, now, you guys got to opt in on this one. Do you want to live or die? You take this land, you do this. And guess what happened? Israel did it. Would they have done it? No. Look at these guys. They're just rebelling all over the place. But they're so scared they do it. And guess who else does it? Some of the Egyptians do.
Oh, yeah.
We don't want to die. Would they have done that? If they did, there's going to be conflict in your lives. Conflict doesn't mean you quit. You don't have to understand it. In conflict, now sometimes the conflict is you're reaping what you sow. Good news with that, you fall down on your knees. Yahweh, what do I got to do to make this right? Ask for forgiveness, give restitution, get moving on. Other conflict is, I don't want to do this anymore. What's the point of this? And he goes, the conflict is a part of your story. Now here's Moses, and Yahweh says, get down there, these people. Can you believe it? Moses, do you think he's shocked?
Yes.
Do you think Yahweh shocked?
No.
Do you think Yahweh didn't know? I used to read that. Oh my gosh, Moses, can you believe what they did? Did Yahweh know this?
He knew what was going to happen.
Could he see their hearts?
Yeah.
The gods and the foreign, the idols, all these things. Yeah, you can see it too. So what's the purpose of this? What's the purpose of all this? And now we're going to go to... Now read Moses' response, verse 32... Somebody read it for me.
Chapter
32.
Go ahead, Wendy. I'll read it.
Thanks.
Now therefore, if thou wilt forgive their sin, but if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book, which thou hast written.
If you read the first part, so Moses returned unto Yahweh and said, Oh, now this people have sinned a great sin, and they have made for themselves gods of gold. If you can't forgive them, just kill me too. What does this do? It paints a picture that it appears that Moses' whole purpose is his family. Saving Israel. There is no future hope, it appears. He's not thinking about the resurrection. He's not thinking about being with Yahweh and this life is going to be like this. Now, he's going to get there. But it looks like right here that Moses is being tried and tested. Not tested like the way people say it. To be tested is go, do you know your ABCs? Do you know your scriptures? Do you know this? Do you know about translations? What Hebrew word is that? This testing is getting you ready. It appears Yahweh is preparing Moses. Where is his hope? It's in his family around him. And Jesus Christ, when Satan tried to take his family away, what did he say? My family are those who do my Father's will. I taught on that for like a year, over and over and over again. I couldn't get away from that scripture. Oh, I was going to put it on my wall. And maybe I'm just fanatic about it. About a year, almost every teaching, whenever I witnessed somebody, Matthew 3:35 came on. Do you know what I did not know? That my son was going to disown me. Unless I caved him. With no provocation. Without being provoked, out of nowhere. You came, you do what I said, all of a sudden, you give your son what he wants or you lose your son. And I had no idea Yahweh was preparing me. And I wrote him a letter that said, you can't do what you're doing. You've done this, and you can't come home until you repent. You have to repent and apologize. Then you can come home. And that's what Yahweh's word would have done. So Yahweh was preparing me for something like this. I mean, this group right here, Tim got snuffed out like that, man. We don't know what's tomorrow. If it's a loved one, it could be your dad, it could be me. Are we living to see that person in the resurrection?
Yes.
To help that person, to say, even if they don't want my help, I'm going to love them, I'm going to be there for them, because I'm going to see them in the resurrection, and they're going to thank me, even if they turn me down. We just watched the War Room, and there's this wife at the end. It's really good. I really encourage you to watch it. And the wife keeps loving her husband, even though she knows he's went out on a date with somebody else, and he loses her job, and he breaks down and goes, what are you doing? And she goes, I love him. And she starts explaining, Christ is first in you, and I will do this for him, even if you don't deserve it. I'm going to fulfill my calling, and he's watching this thing, and he breaks down, and he gets transformed. And that's the hope of the resurrection. It appears to me what's happening here with the 40 days is, I'm going to ruin this for your parents, Esther and Ruth. Every once in a while, teenagers or parents will go out of town with their teenagers at home. No parents. I remember mom and dad would go to town. Dina would come over and start taking. She'd bring a shopping bag. She'd look down the street. What are you doing? You can't come over here and forge. Shut up! They're not in the house. This is. It said Yahweh wanted to kill Aaron because of what Aaron did. Aaron and Israel was not thinking about Yahweh watching everything. But when your parents leave the house. Do you know what they're doing? It's a test. When you go off to college and your parents can't see what you're doing, you know what that is? It's a test. The all-seeing eye sees it. And he goes, I'm not mocked. You do what's right, I'll take care of it. I'll take care of your family. I'll take care of your little sister. Don't blend in, and I will reward you. Comfort is your enemy. Blending in is your enemy. And those who pull you back are helping your enemy. Deliver yourself like a gazelle. If there was anything that I wish you guys could learn from me, is I went up and down this wheel with me and my friends. That I was always going to be the one to save them. And here I was. I would get delivered. Yes! Yes! I'm back! I'm back! And then I had to isolate myself. I'm so lonely. Well, I'll go evangelize the drunkards. And then here I am with my drunkard friends. And they're, oh, isn't that Jesus? Yeah, what are you talking about? Jesus all you want. Oh, we get drunk. And so this cycle would happen over and over again until finally Yahweh's like, you got to break free from it. Why? It's going to go to the NFL. Let's see here. Moses, with the 40-day test and all these plagues and all these things, Yahweh led Moses to places with no water. That's like your dad taking you guys on a vacation and he runs out of gas. And he goes, oh, well, what would you do? Dad! You got a gas can? No, I don't even bring my wallet. And what if he did that just to see if you'd turn on him? And then you turn on them, and you act like little brats. You're not going to get your food or your money. And your brats is like, that's what I thought. I'll be back in a little bit. I'm going to go take a vacation. And so Yahweh is our Father. And He is the one that's testing, training us and rearing us. Not just, this life is this. It's going to be gone so quick. Right now, when you're in high school, just to be a junior or a sophomore, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be gone. Just like that. Older people will keep telling you that. What Yahweh was doing with Moses is He was coaching Moses. Like Cam Newton's father was with Cam Newton. Come on. Why can't I be like them? Come here, Moses. Again? I'm 80 years old. How many times have I been up this mountain? How many mountains did He climb?
Seven.
He's 80 years old. What did Yahweh do? Come on. We walked up one. Remember that? Yeah. Moses is 80 years old. And here he is. He's going up again, up again. What is Yahweh doing? Yahweh was preparing Moses for his position on the new earth. I never thought of that until like yesterday. What's the point of all this with Moses? You look at Moses' life in Deuteronomy. He doesn't get to go in the land of Canaan. Man! I'm not serving that God. And that's just like turning on your dad because he doesn't have gas in it. Really? Okay, good. Moses is going to be exalted higher, one of the highest there's going to be on the new earth. He's going to be rewarded. And what Moses was doing is he was being trained on what? How to lead Yahweh's people. And on the resurrection, he's going to need leaders. He's going to need kings. He's going to need people to have an iron scepter to say, you will not. And here's Moses. And Moses was getting, what was he doing? Refined.
Sorry. Excuse me.
Being refined. And when are we going to be going to the NFL to the new earth? 1 Corinthians 15:52. Anyone know that?
When Christ comes back.
Any moment. In the twinkling of an eye. And they kept going to Jesus Christ. And there's different resurrections. So we won't get into the different resurrections. But when they came to Christ and they go, when are you coming back? He goes, like a thief. Well, when is that? It's a surprise. I show up when you're not expecting me. Pop quiz. Have you ever been home and you thought your parents were home and all of a sudden they come in and you're like, I didn't know you guys are coming home. Right? All of us have. Or bosses show up. In a moment, any moment, are we going to be there? And that's your hope. And you train, and you train, and you train. Esther, I want you to be really honest with this, okay? What if you found out tonight that tomorrow you're going to start school at the University of Harvard?
I'd be really scared.
You stressed out?
Yeah.
Are you prepared?
No.
Okay. That's going to be most people at the resurrection. They've never studied for any of it. Why? I'm thinking about sophomore year. I'm thinking about homecoming. I'm thinking about driving a stick. There's a saying that Brian Butler would say. He'd say, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. And it's the thing about keeping people training all year round. Eat right, do this, do your grades. And Brian Butler, here's these kids with no fathers. Take your ACT. Raising money to take their ACT. Because there's so many kids, they can't play. They don't take their ACT. But if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. When the resurrection comes, you could be a player on the NFL or softball or whatever your discipline is. You could be a coach. You could own a team. Do you think Nick Saban regrets his life choices? I'm sure he does. But when it comes to success with not having friends, are you kidding me? I got 7 national championships. Or you could be a couch potato that looks at everybody else and go, now for us, we're not going to be one of those people that didn't care. They're going to be drug addict vagrants on the street. They don't care. I want to go where Christ is, but I don't want to earn anything. But as far as us, are we going to have regret? And as far as whether we quit or not, I forgot to tell you guys, you know one of the best things that ever happened to me? I got kicked off a football team in 6th grade. one of the best things that's ever happened to me.
Why?
Because a coach, up until that point, I was cocky. I could talk, and I could act arrogant or whatever. People would back off. But I was playing on a competitive football team with a guy who was a successful athlete, and he screamed and yelled at me, and he called me a female body part in front of everybody. Mm. Why? Because I talked the guy out of the way of somebody, and I was being a sissy. And he called me out, and I said something stupid to him. Get out of here. I was completely humiliated. One of the best things that ever happened to me. Because I went home, I told my dad. My dad said, are you going to quit? And I went... It never even occurred to me of quitting. I didn't know I was kicked off the team either. I looked at my dad and said, I'm not quitting. You don't have to quit. If they kick you off the team, kick you off the team. If you don't make the roster, don't make the roster. But don't quit. And if you don't make it, I gave all I had. You studied for the A. You did it with your mom. You did this. You did this. You did this. Stop crying, Esther. That's the best you got. If you did the best you can, that's all you got. And that's the purpose of this elite training group, is to say, when we meet Christ, did you do the best you could? Come on, man. Did you do it? And because of that, I learned to be yelled at by a jerk who didn't like me. He's very cocky. And I learned to gravitate to people that can get more out of me than I could myself. Here's guys that yell and scream at me. You're playing competitive softball now. You got these guys yelling at other players that don't like you. I don't know anything about your team, but I know athletics and I know high school. I don't like this coach. I don't like that coach. I don't like this. But they got something you want. And if you start doing what they say, you start becoming better. You start gravitating not to a pastor that's going to be hugging you. Come here. Like a therapist. But be gravitating to a coach. A coach that goes, get up. Get up. Did you do your grades? And all of a sudden you're like, and it's a different training. We're used to doing it with athletics, just not with the word. And because of that, I learned how to get successful at football. I learned to be screaming, and you guys would be yelling at me like this. And I was like in the military, and then you spit, grab my face, and like, ah, 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 ah. And you and I would be thinking, this guy's fat. His wife is ugly. Nobody likes him. And I'd entertain my thoughts because I had to take it. Why did I take it? Because I want to play. And here it was. And so this is just thinking and thinking, thinking. Control your thinking. So and then comfort in sports. If you went to a training camp and your mom spent money, and you're really excited because it's training camp. Let's just call church training camps. So if you went to a training camp and you got done and everybody said that was easy, what would you think?
It's a waste of time.
You'd be like, you better give me my money back. When you go to a trainer, they're doing conditioning. What are you expecting?
Hard work.
I hate this guy. When you're training in the gym, what you learn is the best people to work out with are people who are bigger, stronger than you. And the best workout partner is one you don't like, right? Because Elijah's about ready to, that's all I got. And I go, two more. Take the weight. Two more. Take the weight. And then you get two more. And then you get down, you're like, thank you. What is that? That's called spotting. And that you got some more on you, and even when you're spotting and lifting the weights, I got you. I just won't do it for you, right? If you didn't get it, oh man, you're that close. And that's what we're supposed to be doing with the word. Training, competing. My friends who didn't play football, they started chasing girls. Some of them got girls pregnant. They're acting really cool. I took a break. Go eat some chips. I try to take a break at work. I'm not good at it, but I'm going to decompress. So Yahweh, I look through a window, and there's a young man with a man bun, looks very cool. And there's a girl next to him. She's really pregnant. And it's really awkward looking through here. I'm like, what's going on there? Interesting. She's really pregnant. Here's this really, really cool looking. He thinks she's cool with his man bun. I think I look cool in my hair. and as I'm looking at them, I look outside, and do you know what that building's for? Paternity tests. And you're looking at it. What a story. Is she pregnant? Are they married?
No.
And I go, man, I thought about missing it. So look for people, not just in sports or athletics. Verrill had somebody she studied with named Gonzalo. Mm-hmm. This guy, you should hear the stories about this guy. He was so gifted. His father made him didn't want him to go to college, university. So he'd have to go to work, then go to university, and then he would study at night after he got home at what time?
Between 12 and 4 p.m.
So he'd study between 12 and 4, then he'd get sleep, then he'd go to school. And he got all kinds of scholarships with his...
gold.
Yeah, so he's like all kinds of academics. This guy was really, really gifted. What did it do for you being around somebody that gifted?
What?
Did it make you better being around smart people?
No.
No? Okay. Rush Limbaugh said... So Rush Limbaugh said that once. He said... somebody called him, and he's a very successful person. They said, what's the key? I'm a young guy. What's the key to success? He said... surround yourself with more successful people than yourself. Your comfort zone is to surround yourself with people like yourself where you're the big fish. That's what you want to do. But you're never going to succeed in anything. And that's what, if we do that with the word, surround yourself with people who know more scriptures than you, who can talk about things, who challenge you in purity, in morality, and in disciplines. And what will it do is it will raise your standards. Like your training,
what I shared with you about Gonzalo, he received Christ when was in university, and he moved more like Christian, like more Christian. We are studying together, mm-hmm. and he prayed for wisdom because he don't have time for study. Mm-hmm. So what I learned from him, and I start to do in my life. To start to pray for wisdom too, mm-hmm. but I have more time than him for study.
Yeah,
but it was here. Yeah. So all the what I fight with myself is like, oh, no, it's smart. I can do this. I every week I call my dad and say I don't want to study anymore, and he said you will study 3 or more. Take me. But when I started with Gonzalo after that 3 years more, I lose 3 years at university. He teach me indirect because he's not speak like what is about talk your face and move your face too is, and I start to say okay when I will start to study I will pray for mm-hmm. I have the wisdom, I have the intellect, okay. So I can do this, and that pushed me in that way. And another, he was really clean. Like clean out him,
yeah,
and I start to clean my friend too.
So
I know a nice person, but I have my darkness. So every person has darkness in their life. Yeah. So that is.
And so, like with the training, with that, it's, if you surround yourself with very successful people, it's going to help you. And how can we endure what our calling is if we're not surrounding ourselves with more successful people?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Challenge. They should challenge you. You go to the gym, somebody's stronger than me, or they can pitch better than me. You know one of the best things that could ever happen to you is for somebody who's a little bit better than you but for the same position. Mm-hmm. It's not what you want. You know what that's going to make you do? You got to give even more. You're going to have to want it more. And you got to want it. How can you endure Hebrews 11, 10, 11, and 12 if you don't want it?
Yeah.
Well, how do you want to suffer like Christ if you don't know why? Just for suffering for the suffering's sake? Christ was able to do it for the hope of the resurrection in the next life. And so what we should be doing is if we're surrounding ourselves with people are severe with the word, is where I'm not challenged, I'm not exhausted, I'm not breaking a sweat. That was easy. It was comforting. It's not preparing you for the battle. We don't know when somebody's going to get sick. None of us in this family knew Tim was going to die. And some people in our family, I don't know where they were, but I was very grateful that I just got done with a mission trip. So I was in a really good place. But some people weren't. And they weren't ready for it. And we don't know when something's going to happen. Moses didn't know. Peter didn't know. Paul, and we don't want to know. But if you stay ready. And so... And then endure the training by focusing on where you're going and be very leery of your enemy. Your enemy is yourself and your comfort. And easy translations. Mm-hmm. I don't want... Do you want... Yes, I want easy. I want easy schoolwork. I want easy work. I want somebody just to pay me, right? But is that how you earn things? Yahweh doesn't speak easily. He speaks in parables. He wrote the Gospel of John. What's going on with the Gospel of John? Yeah. What's going on with the Book of Job? Ecclesiastes. Then Revelation. What is it? He's challenging us, going, do you want the easy path? And every single one of us has a resume. And in the Book of Daniel, it said the watchers were watching. Imagine somebody walking around every day with you going, whoa, I got that one. Wait. Check. He got that. He got that. He got that. He got that. And the word, and find a samurai. A samurai, I think it's Japanese.
Yeah.
Here's these disciplined warriors. And your dad and I took medals together, and they said one of the things that made the samurais different was they're so disciplined. And I'm trying to remember back to sophomore year. But our metal guy explained why the samurai sword was so different. Because it could break other swords, it could do all these things. And he said, it's because when you make a sword, you beat it until it gets big and flat, and then you fold it. And you beat it, gets flat, then you fold it. You fold it like that. And so most of the world would beat it 50 or 75 times, fold it, sharpen it, you got it. But the samurais would do it 1,000 times. And this could have been things handed down from Adam and Eve, mm-hmm. or Yahweh or something. And by beating it and folding it and beating it and folding it and beating it and folding it, and what happened is it refined and made it something so hard, so sharp. With the word, find yourself samurai warriors to be around. What is a warrior? Not because you can still have friends and acquaintances. I got people I goof off with that like my jokes. But I'm around them very... It's usually just on Facebook. But the thing would be... Here's an example. How many minutes can you recite scriptures? What is that? That's a standard most people don't have. How many minutes... Not how many scriptures... How many minutes? You want to talk about humility? My nephew's 5 years old. He's singing the books of the Bible because his mother chose to lead. You didn't have anybody in your family leading. And you choose, I might not do it right, but I'm going to try and I'll learn. What did you do? Your son learned the books of the Bible probably before almost anybody in our family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Before me. Here's this 5-year-old. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. And you know what I did? I envied a 5-year-old. Man, I wish I knew that. The same way I envied speaking in tongues.
Yeah.
I wish I knew that. Until finally I had to ask Shauna for the DVD or CD, and I put it in the car, and I humbled myself like a child, and on 2 drives I had a couple books of the Bible. So you want to know how many scriptures you know? Start off with Genesis. What scriptures do you know? Mm-hmm. Jacob loved Rachel. Then you go to Exodus, Leviticus, and go through it. How many minutes? I'm up to 30 minutes. That's fantastic. Most Christians, how many scriptures can you recite? For God so loved the world, He gave His only begotten Son. That's like somebody that doesn't even know what a sword is. Where's your sword? I got a sword. What is a sword? It's speaking this. How can somebody defend you and your brother, or your brother and your sisters and your mom, when Satan, who is as a roaring lion, who wants to pounce on every one of them right now, how are these people going to defend you? They don't even got swords. Oh, holy moly, call an exorcist, I'm out of here. Somebody who knows the scriptures that say, I might not like you, you might annoy me, but Nick Saban annoyed a lot of people, but he got a lot of people in the NFL too. Now, with Esther, back to Esther. What if she started studying as if any day she could be sent to Harvard? Harvard's not a good school now, but it's just an easier to recognize. What if she started studying that way? Sports, come and gone, you're done, right? It's over. Your education is going to be your foothold into your career. But what if she started studying? She raised her standards, not this May South, but there could be a chance that I could be as. And what happens if you? And that's something you got to do right here. But if you did, would Yahweh be watching?
Mm-hmm.
And he's going, we got one. Somebody who's not going to blend in, especially if you're 20 years old, everybody drinking beer, sitting around, make fun of people, stuff. That's your dad and I went through. Don't do it. Some people never get out of that. No, just on the weekends, just once a month. Some people never get out. We know people that never got out of it. And they couldn't break out. You're going to go, it's a trap. And I saw, it was a thing about hunting. But back to Esther, if she started studying, if she was going to go to get drafted to Harvard any day now, what would happen to her life? What would happen to her? She would really, really benefit. And in Revelation chapter 21, the new heaven and the new earth, I think is something that we should quote that every single morning. Before you get out of the bed, we'll just turn to Revelation 21:1. I can imagine Avery Johnson or somebody every morning reading a report about a guy getting in the draft. Jordy Nelson out of Riley County, Kansas. K-State walk-on. And he reads it every morning.
20?
21 verse 1.
Okay.
Sean, would you read that?
It's very sad.
Yeah, 21:1.
Yeah.
And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth have passed away, and the sea is no more.
So Esther, this is where all of us are going. This is where we're going to be. And do you know how many people in your high school know about this? Probably 90% don't. Most people at churches, they don't know anything about New Earth. They know about heaven. How can they endure if they don't know where they're going? Your inheritance, or my inheritance, but specifically, Esther's really on my heart. Your inheritance could be the future of Ruth. And the Yahweh goes, if you do this, and if you do this right, and you don't do this, I'll take care of Ruth in these areas that you're worried about. And if you do this right, if you do that right, I'll take care of your dad in these other areas. I'm just a kid. That's what they said about Joseph, mm-hmm. right? And then you can imagine but we'll stop.
Father,
thank you, Father, for your word. Then we'll go ahead and hear from our Father, and we'll turn off the recording, and we'll do a prophecy for Elijah. I'll give a prophecy. No, each one of you is a leader, and you're the hero of your own story. You already have this inside your heart and your mind. You know you're the hero of your story. Now be the hero. Don't blend in, but lead. I speak every day when you're quiet, and I'll teach you how to strip off your old man and kill your flesh so that you can become what you are called to be. Know that inside you is greatness, and I wait to emerge.